Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. Hi, everybody. I am coming up now on 7 months of hosting this podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Please rate, review, and share the podcast if you like it so I can get more people exposed to the podcast. You can do this on Apple, iTunes, Stitcher, different other mediums where the podcast is, like Google Play. Please share it on social media and enjoy my next guest. My next guest is Danny Bauer. He is the founder of Better Leaders, Better Schools, the podcast host of Better Leaders, Better Schools, and author of the Better Leaders, Better Schools Roadmap. Danny provides coaching to leaders, aka ruckus makers, to bring them out of the isolation that's often found in school leadership in order to help them level up their leadership. A former principal and English teacher, Danny hosts masterminds with school leaders across the globe, as well as providing them with tools such as Vivid Vision and Ideal Week. Welcome to the podcast, Danny.
Dana, thanks for having me. So this is exciting to see you launch this project and interview a bunch of wonderful educators and leaders, and I'm honored to be asked to be on the show.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show, and I've been working with Danny for the past couple of years in one of his masterminds. We're wanting to get to know you on my podcast for those listeners that don't know anything about you and the work that you've been doing for the past several years. But let's start off with telling me about a time when you were in the trenches and how you managed to crawl out of that situation.
Yeah, the trenches. That's a not so fun a place to be. But through our work, right, one-on-one and through the mastermind, I know that you've been on the trenches too and mm-hmm. a number of your guests. So one thing I want to say before I share my story, it's normal, right? It happens to everyone. Sometimes you can anticipate it, but sometimes you just find yourself in a bunch of muck and then you have to realize, like, how do I get out of there? So, you know, for me, I think the one that hits home and that a lot of people have told me they resonate with was actually my last principalship. And, you know, there's a lot going on in that story. There's so much context that I could give. But the shorter version, I'm completely new to a community, a district, and a school where I'm asked to lead. And from like the beginning of the year, August, and school actually started before I began. So the teachers were already planning. I got there when the kids got there. So that's less than ideal. But from August through October, early November, things were great. They were running smoothly. The feedback was extremely positive from all stakeholders. And I even remember sitting with my supervisor. You know, we had this shared open space right in the middle of the campus. And we had just gone on instructional rounds, you know, visited 4 to 6 teachers, wrote down a bunch of notes. And we were just jamming on the feedback that we would give, right? What did we see that were strengths in the classrooms? Where could people improve? And we were like talking the same language. And I remember her telling me how lucky they were for me to have come to this campus and how excited they were for my leadership, the value I was creating and bringing to the table and all this stuff. And I'll never forget, Dana, because it was just such a strange moment. Maybe a week or so later from that conversation where everything was going great, I got written up for the first time. Wow. And I'd never been written up in my whole professional career, right? So that was like a shot to my gut. Mm-hmm. But that type of stuff happens, right? I need to be objective about that. And of course, there's ways to always improve. But anyways, that was like my spidey signal, like what's going on here? Because I've never experienced it before. And the follow-up was, I have serious concerns about your leadership, right? Which sounds vastly different than, we're so excited you're here, you're adding so much value, you're the right pick for the community. Yeah. And it changed like that. like literally in a blink of an eye. And from there, things just got worse between my relationship between me and my supervisor. And it was just so strange because the lived experience, right? And the data that I was taking in through my eyes, or what parents were telling me and what they were emailing me or what they were saying about me on social media, even in places they didn't know I could see, but right, teachers were in, like, let's say a private group or a parent, and they'd show it, and it was positive.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden things are like super negative, and it was just like, what's going on here? You know, where I come from, 2 + 2 = 4, but it seemed like in this situation, 2 + 2 = 5. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't figure out why that was. So it was a really, really tough experience. And I got, you know, written up a number of times that year. And honestly, so it's looking back, like I used to have a pretty big chip on my shoulder, you know, to be honest. And this gets to the, how did I get out of the trenches part of it? There was a part of like really digging into the gratitude journal, the things that I teach, gratitude journal, mindfulness, meditation. You know, there's a faith component to my life. And then very much leaning on the community I had around me, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of a mastermind that I've been in since 2015. They helped me see straight, because sometimes you're just going to get conflicting signals, and somehow you got to find the truth in all of it.
Yeah.
So long story short, you know, in reflecting on the whole experience, it's funny because you hear about entrepreneurs and two things help them be successful. You hear a lot. Mm-hmm. Often it's a baby, but I didn't have a baby on the way. Right. And like, okay, we need to get figured out. Or they have a really rough professional experience where they're getting pushed out, they're getting fired, or they're just in a place where they don't want to be, right? And so they have to figure it out too. So all of that to say, I was in that camp. My wife was, you know, she still is a scientist, so she's a researcher at a university, and she's like, you know what, I'm applying to jobs actually. I want to stretch and grow in different ways, and I'm also looking at international opportunities. I said, you know what, go for it. And, you know, give me a year of runway to make this work or not. And we decided to move from Texas to Belgium. And that's all she wrote. You know, it's been a success. And I wake up every day, you know, Dana, like I've been doing it since 2015, but full time since 2017. So just over 3 years. And I still can't believe that I have the privilege to work with people like you and other, you know, wonderful leaders. And that's my work. Mm-hmm. It's just such an honor, you know, mm-hmm. So I'll stop there and check in with you.
Well, that's so interesting to just hear kind of your experience and how, you know, like they say that entrepreneurs often grow out of a tough situation, and, you know, how you were able to not take that personally. Like, you know, you're new to this community, you have this great feedback after a couple months, and then all of a sudden, you know, there was obviously some probably planning to push you out. And, you know, we often see that in work environments and toxic cultures. And my question in that situation is, how did you not take it personally? And, you know, you said you have the support of the mastermind that you've always been a part of. And how did you, you know, how were you able basically to complete the school year and do what's best for students that year, despite all these negative influences and getting written up?
Yeah. So I don't want to paint an incorrect picture. You know, mm-hmm. I think I did take it personally at first. You know, it really, really, really hurt. I remember once too, I was getting this feedback, and the funny thing is, the podcast was actually in what I was building, right? Yeah. The Better Leaders brand, Serving School Leaders, was actually being used against me in my work.
Wow.
And I'll never forget, you know, my supervisor looking me in the eye and saying, you're not the leader you talk about on the podcast. You're a fake, you're a fraud. We already have the imposter syndrome, and she was basically my living imposter syndrome. That hurt a lot, honestly. And in order to compose myself, like, you know, there's fight and flight, right? Yeah. like that really made me mad. And I didn't want to react in a way that wouldn't be representative of the type of leader I wanted to be. And because it hurt too, I remember, listen, can I have a few minutes or whatever? And I excused myself from our one-on-one setting and just to compose myself, because I needed to take some deep breaths and like recenter, because I was either gonna freak out or like start bawling in tears. And you know what? That actually got put in a write-up also, that he left the meeting because he, I forget the word, in like something about composure, but I'm like, isn't this a good thing, right? Like that I said, I need a time out, yeah, as opposed to like losing it in the moment. And so that just shows you like a little ticky tack stuff. None of it had to do with student achievement, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, culture, client, you know, it was all these little things, but man, did that wear me down. And I said, I don't want to be a part of that. So I did take it personally. And, you know, I don't know how to say this in the right way. Like somehow I wanted to figure out like, how do I prove him wrong or get him back in some sort of way? And I'll tell you, the moment it shifted. So, and I think this was for, it took time, right? The love and support of my family, of my mastermind, you know, time and time, week after week, drip after drip, like it finally worked on me. Mm-hmm. But this was a year later. So it's been a year from this terrible experience. I've lived overseas. We were still in Belgium, but I was actually back in Florida at my mom's house, mm-hmm, renegotiating and like reapplying for a visa, right, to get back into the country. That's another story. I'm gonna save it for another day. that one's a good one. But I'm sitting there at my mom's kitchen table. The beautiful, bright Florida sun is coming in the windows. And I had just released my first book, The Better Leaders, Better Schools Roadmap. And I look on Amazon for the first time and it says hot new release number one on Amazon. And I'm like, wow. And I took a screenshot because I want to, mm-hmm, capture that moment. And then I looked at the people in my mastermind, right? And there was a lot of people in there, almost 60, you know, mm-hmm, maybe 57, something like that. But the point is like, there's a lot of leaders that you're getting to support and, mm-hmm, inspire. And I'm like, ooh, this is a really neat moment. And then I actually balanced my accounting too. I have an accountant now. I finally don't do my taxes. Thank God. That's a little tip of delegation. But back in 2017, I was still wearing that hat. And so I was cleaning up the books and just looking at, you know, how the business performed. And I realized that I beat an internal marker, which, I mean, who cares? They're all arbitrary. Mm-hmm. But I had made more money personally through Better Leaders, Better Schools than what I had as a principal. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't matter. I'm not in this to try to be rich. But I had in my mind, if I could just get past that number for whatever reason, I proved them wrong, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was a success. And all those three things like all came together at the same moment. Kitchen table, sun coming in, uh-huh, and that's when I let go. That's the moment I stopped taking it personally. And you know, for your listeners and viewers, that took me a year. Yeah. You know, and now it doesn't bother me like that anymore. Yeah. And actually, last piece, I'm thankful for it, right? Because I see it as part of my journey and what pushed me to speed up where I'm at. Because if I was there, if I was comfortable and successful, I still might be doing Better Leaders sort of at 20-30%, you know, mm-hmm, not full time. So I'm thankful for that experience.
Yeah, no, that's so great to hear that. I mean, you know, you're human and you know, everybody is probably going to take it personally at some level. And, you know, to hear that, you know, it did take you a year, but you had that revelation, right? All at that kitchen table. And you know, how your book was the number one school leader bestseller, and you know, just seeing that, you know, you've broke even or you've made more than as a principal, and you know that your business is a success. I mean, mm-hmm, you know, had we not had you as a full-time you know, directing all these masterminds, hosting all these masterminds, you know, interviewing, yeah, your guests on the podcast, you know, you wouldn't have been able to give your full energy to Better Leaders, Better Schools. So, you know, as you said, it's a good thing that that happened during the 2017-2018 school year. So talk to me a little bit about your evolution of interviewing guests. I listened to one of your podcasts recorded in August of 2020, and you were talking to somebody who you had on one of your first podcasts back in 2015. And, you know, you were telling him how when you go back and listen to your first recordings that you kind of cringe. Oh, and now that you've
terrible.
Been interviewing guests for the past 5 years, kind of, you know, how do you kind of rate how you've done and you're evaluating your interviewing skills and just, you know, your process of getting guests recorded and getting those episodes out? Because, you know, a lot of us are pretty new to the podcast world, but you're one of those that have been around for quite a while.
Yeah. And when you say it, that it doesn't necessarily make me feel old, but like, it really feels like I started yesterday. You know, yeah. I know I've had a lot of life experience between when I launched, you know, that was back in Chicago. It was a totally different life. And, to today where I'm now in New York. Wow. So yeah, those old episodes, I'm just like, whoa. But if there's a tip, you know, for your listener and viewer, it just gets started, right? Mm-hmm. Like jump in and you iterate and you grow and you evolve. And somewhere along the line, this was in 2019, I was living in Scotland, I hired a podcast coach. Mm-hmm. And that's good because whether it's, you know, that incident with the supervisor, there were some things that she said that were correct, but then there's a lot that was just, you know, baloney. And so, and I think one thing that makes the mastermind so powerful is it helps you eliminate blind spots.
Yeah.
So I hired the podcast coach and he objectively listened and gave me some feedback. There were a lot of things that we did to change, but in terms of the interview style, I think I'm fairly good at being present during a show. I want it to sound more like a conversation than an interview. Mm-hmm. An early mistake I made that was a crutch. I had a format. So, you know, there were only the same questions every single time. And that evolved to what are the last two questions I will always want to end with, but the rest, how can I personalize this and make the guest the hero or the shero? Mm-hmm. And so one thing that I learned from the podcast coach too, and you did this with me is, you know, we do a pre-interview. Mm-hmm. And so again, relying on my own skills, I might sit here and try to have a great conversation with you. But if you don't have those same abilities, because you have different strengths and different weaknesses, then I would be like, Dana, what's your problem? You're stiff. Like, you know, like this conversation sucks. Like it's all, and I would blame you. I was the problem.
Yeah.
And so what I learned is to do the hard work, to spend a little more time. And this might mean that I lose some guests, right? Like, especially, you know, I get pitched all the time these days, New York Times, best-selling authors. And it feels really good when they want to be on the show. And I'll say, hey, there's a pre-interview process and it, you know, takes this amount of time. And some say, nah, I'd rather not, because so many podcasters don't do that.
Yeah.
But that's something that is now a part of the process, and I'm going to miss some people as a result. I feel good about that. But anyway, so during the pre-interview, just get to know them, to build a bit of a relationship, establish some chemistry, and sometimes to mutually agree, I don't think this is going to work, right? I remember getting in on a pre-interview call. I remember it was a gentleman. I don't remember what his whole deal was or what he was trying to talk about on a show, but we got like two questions in, describing the vision and what I want to do. And he's like, you know, I don't think it's going to work. And I said, I don't think it's going to work either. And we spent, you know, 5-7 minutes to get to that point, as opposed to recording a show, you know, and then putting it out there that's not going to serve my listener, which is the ultimate goal. So yeah, that's a bit of how it's changed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've kind of gotten that from you and having those pre-interview chats. And, you know, I did that with you and I did that with one of the other guests I'm recording with today who already know, you know, but, you know, I think that's a good chat to have just to kind of plan out what you're going to talk about on the podcast. And, you know, I have had some guests that say, you know, I do a lot of podcasts, so I'd rather not do that pre-chat. And, you know, then we just take a few minutes before we record. And you know, plan out what we're going to talk about. But, you know, I feel, like you said, a lot more comfortable when you have that pre-chat, you have that time to get to know the guest and, you know, find out what they want to highlight on the podcast. So
for sure.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the books that we read in the mastermind. Because, you know, there's a wide variety of books. We're currently reading The Infinite Game. And, you know, we've read a lot of books about school leadership and leading, like we had Leading with Grace last fall. But how do you go about choosing these books? And, you know, they're not all having to do with school leadership. A lot of them are about leadership in general. And we had How to Be an Anti-Racist in the summer. So, you know, I know you put your book list together almost a year in advance before the school year starts. So kind of tell me, walk me through your process for that.
And it is fluid, Dana. You know, I'll make some changes as new recommendations or themes or stuff happens in society where, you know, like How to Be Anti-Racist with George Floyd's murder, Breonna Taylor, and, you know, the list goes on and on. How could we not talk about race, right? Within a place where it definitely comes up and it's important to understand and do the right thing as a school leader. So that actually transparently wasn't on the list. But then I put it on the list because we had to do it. Doesn't mean that that book's perfect either, but I just want to have the conversation. So I have books planned right now through 2022. So 2 years out. And so it does have to be fluid. Couple things I want to make sure I do. I want to read as little about education as possible, right? Sounds crazy. I'm working, growing, connecting, and mentoring school leaders, and I don't want to read about school. And my belief is that they already read enough about school. You know, you have all the degrees you can get. You know what I mean? Like, you've been to the top, like you're the best. And there's people, I think, that come to the mastermind that are very self-driven. So I know that they're reading about education. So the first filter is it not an education book? Okay, cool. So if it passes that test, most likely, you know, we might check it out. Then I think too, and this is hard, but I want to find books from female authors and authors of color too. So I look at that, and I don't know who challenged me. It was somebody in the mastermind, but they said, where's the diversity in the books we read, right? Mm-hmm. Because I had worked really hard on the school leadership series team and also the guests that come on the podcast to have a diverse group of hosts or guests. So I've been making an effort with that, with the books. And then, at the end of the day, I really want folks to work on their mindset. You know, it's about tools. It's about strategies and mental models. And so one we haven't read yet, but it's coming up in a couple months, is called Thinking in Bets by Annie Dukes. Mm-hmm. And she was a World Series poker champion, right? Like, what are we reading about probability and poker, right, in the mastermind? Well, that's because she knows how to make smart decisions, right? And a game that's extremely high stakes with a lot of money on the line, right? It can be very easy to get emotional in those moments. Well, how do you strip some of that away and place better bets and make decisions more objectively? I think that'll be a gift that really serves, you know, the leaders that I have the privilege to work with. So, yeah, mental models, thinking strategies, I love digging into culture and, you know, that kind of stuff. So that's pretty much how I go about it. And I read a ton, you know, there's books everywhere. I need to buy a bookshelf. This is my new house. So that's why it's still so barren, but in a rental too, there's holes in the wall. I mean, I could give you a tour of like what makes me frustrated about this rental, but we'll save that for another show also. Yeah. But I, you know, I read a ton to stay ahead of you guys, and then select books that I think will serve you well.
Mm-hmm. Walk me a little bit through kind of your process for, you know, how you serve the leaders in the different masterminds, because for anybody who might be interested in joining a mastermind with you or other school leaders who host masterminds, you know, do you discuss the same type of things in all the masterminds, or do you have masterminds that are particular for superintendents versus principals and other type of leaders. Let the listeners know a little bit kind of how those are built up.
So interesting thing, and this is like leadership tip as well. You have to have boundaries and to exclude sort of generously. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, before I was doing this full time, survive, how am I going to eat? Yeah. I used to let teachers in all the time. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with teachers. But what I've found is that often they're not the right fit for our group. Mm-hmm. If a teacher is towards the end of her certification, you know, to be an administrator and wants to be an administrator, then that's a yes. But if it's a teacher who wants to explore teaching and leadership from a classroom lens, they've never had a great experience in the group. And that was my fault for letting them in. So I bring that up because you asked about superintendents too. And actually twice I've tried to launch a mastermind for superintendents. The first time was a significant failure. Like everybody was just a hard no. And really, I think that's because of the lack of my network with superintendents. And then this past year, there was a lot of interest and that fizzled out. And to be honest, I'm not 100% sure why. Maybe still needing to build stronger relationships in the network and having more trust. I don't know. So anyways, that's to say I don't have groups for them and I'm okay with that. So I define school leader locally, right? So principal, AP, instructional coach, anybody else from central office, there's people who are in charge of curriculum. They're in the group. And actually some assistant superintendents have joined. So that's who we serve. Curriculum wise, there's the books. So that's a touchstone. That's the same, but how we discuss them, like it's really interesting, you know, some groups will take it one route and another group, you know, you're in the free spirits. So you guys go some really interesting ways sometimes. And they'll catch me by surprise. The format, right? Loose and tight rules, just like DeForest used to talk about with PLCs. So the structure is similar, but within our mastermind, we allow members to facilitate. That helps grow their leadership, but also is a really a blessing to the groups because they bring their own unique experiences and perspective and strengths to the group, which means it's not, you know, the Danny show every single week. So I really love that because then it makes it different every single time. And so the only thing that we have to hold sacred is the hot seat time, right? And that's where you, Dana, you know, I mean, if you're facing a challenge or trying to get a project off the ground, imagine having a variety of people as your board of directors, all on your team, wanting you to be a success, giving you feedback, asking you tough questions, sharing stories of success, sharing stories of how they've failed and what they've learned from the experience. And then you get to speed up, accelerate your own journey, right? And so that you don't make those same mistakes. And, you know, you'll figure it out. The people in the mastermind are driven. They're high achievers. They're going to figure it out. But by being in a group like that, you can figure it out in hours, what it will take years of experience to understand. And then we do other stuff, right? Like tip of the week, wins of the week, accountability type stuff, you know, different types of games for culture and breakout rooms. But the core of it is the hot seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's such a great opportunity for leaders to, get a little feedback from those people that are, you know, non-biased, because being in that mastermind, you're working with leaders that are, you know, across the US, Canada, and sometimes internationally. And, you know, they're bringing each their own tips from their levels of experience. And you have, in the group that I'm in, you know, we have about 13 people and, you know, sometimes only 8 people are there, but, you know, you get all those voices, you get, feedback, you can hear what, how they might approach a situation. And, it also helps you learn, about experiences other people are facing and, you know, some of the tips that people might give, in case as a leader that you come across those experiences in your career at some point. So, you know, I think it it really is a great opportunity to be a part of, and you know, getting to know those leaders. And, you know, we have our, you know, own way of kind of connecting, and, you know, we have a lot of laughs during the mastermind as well. So let's shift a little bit and talk about your upcoming book. I know you've been talking a lot in your Better Leaders, Better Schools newsletter and the emails that come out about the book. And just let me know a little bit about how long you've been working on it versus how long it took you to write your first book, the BLBS Roadmap, and kind of what the working title is and what the content's going to be about.
Yeah, so the first book, you know, I followed my productivity system and wrote the first draft, 47,000 words within 3 months. This time around, throwing a pandemic, an international move, and it's taken a bit longer. I'm still on target. The first draft's due in November, and I think I'm at 44,000 words with two more chapters to go. So everything's looking brilliantly. One change, and you have to understand, so the first book I self-published, and I just wanted to tell stories. I wanted to share tips and anecdotes, things that work for me, right? Knowing the publisher I'm working with and some of their needs, right, and their brand, this time I'll have to include some research as well, right? And that's not necessarily hard to do, but it's different than the first book and just makes the process a little bit newer and slower for me. So that's one thing I've learned. The working title, well, it's about the mastermind. So what's really interesting, and I'll say this too, because this is just like another leader tip. First, like I said, in 2015, I just started, right? In the podcast, I thought, looking back, it sounds bad, but, you know, people enjoyed it. It took off. And now I think we put out a better product as a podcast. But if you show up consistently, if you serve, if you always think outside yourself and how do you give, right? How do you serve first and that it's valuable? I believe that you'll get rewarded for that, you know, 9 times out of 10. And so the cool thing is that, you know, really 4 publishers approached me within the last calendar year to do a book, like major educational publishers, and, you know, had some talks with all of them to be transparent. And I landed with one. And part of the reason why I really liked working with the editor, we just had, you know, a relationship that connected super easy, and she's wonderful. But also they wanted to do a book on the work, right? They wanted to do a book on the mastermind. So that's the working title is the mastermind, unlocking the potential of every school leader, something like that, right? But what I've known from experience is that there's untapped potential within every district, and every district doesn't have the capacity to really unearth that. Mm-hmm. And my lived experience too, sometimes districts completely overlook, right? Leadership training, you know, we talk about how to get test scores up or compliancy type stuff. Do these things, check them off, or you get fired. But we don't talk a lot about vision, right? How to build ownership and enrollment, how to have tough conversations, you know, how to talk about race in a school. And so those things, I've filled that gap through the mastermind. So consistency of the show, consistency of serving through the mastermind. And today I have a contract to do a book on that work because it is transforming, in my opinion, professional development for leaders. So who knows what'll happen? Like, I'm looking forward to the book being out. It'll be out in July. That's the target. And maybe it'll open some doors where we can serve a few more leaders, or, you know, I like to call them ruckus makers, those agents of change in education. I don't know if I answered all your questions regarding the book, but that's what I remembered I was supposed to talk about.
Yeah. No, well, that tells us a lot about, you know, kind of what that's going to be about. It'll be out in, you know, still about 9 months. So you're still working on it, but
yeah.
You know,
can I say this too? Like, so obviously, since I do masterminds, I'd love for people to join, right? I do hope that happens. I want to be clear about that. But the book is written in a way where if districts wanted to start them themselves if you want to start one, you know, just as the reader, or even I think there's tips and skills and strategies that you could just apply to your gatherings, right? With mm-hmm. your teachers or with your small internal leadership team. Hey, let me do this activity Danny suggested. It's going to level up, you know, what you offer. So I hope people join. I see people starting their own. Maybe some districts will ask, hey, we want to start our own. Can you consult with us to get it off the ground? So we'll see. But the goal is to put what I've learned out there, make it transparent. Mm-hmm. You can take from it and either do it yourself or join one that's already working.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's something we need today, right? Because you know, what you've been doing works well. And, you know, there are a few people that are starting their own that have been in your mastermind as well. But, you know, to put a book out there, to give tips to districts and, you know, other leaders that might want to start is, you know, a great way to, you know, share some of your expertise. I know in the past, prior to the pandemic, that you did speak at different conferences, you gave some keynotes, and, you know, you said you don't have anything scheduled, but talk to me a little bit about, you know, some of the talks that you've given in the past and maybe where you're looking to speak maybe when all this is over and we start having conferences again.
Sure. Yeah, in the past, you know, I've talked a lot about obviously like leadership. I've talked about personal presence, you know, that I don't remember the title. It had something to do with, you know, weather and climate, you know, because I know, you know, if I didn't do the routines and rituals I need to do prior to this conversation with you, I wouldn't be very engaging. Our conversation would not be fun to watch or listen. And so it's like how you show up really impacts the weather. And that's a whole, you know, whole thing, and how to reflect on how you want to show up, how to make sure you embed those routines and rituals, why it's even important to consider, because there's a lot of science around being constantly connected to work. What does that do to us at a physiological, you mm-hmm. know, level? And you know, I mean, our bodies really break down. So there's that piece. I like talking a lot about personal philosophy. So it's again, like, who are you? So I had this personal philosophy thing that I do, and my personal philosophy is to be an intentional catalyst, mm-hmm. because I know that I can have very strong positive or strong negative presence, and like it or not, that's going to have an impact. And to be honest, yesterday I was a little grouchy pants, like I was not fun to be around, and that caused like conflict, right, internally between me and my wife. I don't know what was going on, but I was not fun to be around. Today's a much better day. We even worked together in the office, so it was great. Like, you know, everything's fine. But today my presence is a lot more positive, and so that's going to have an impact. So I'm a catalyst. I need to think about that. And maybe it was, I realized talking to you right now, just metacognitively realizing I didn't do my journal yesterday. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So maybe that was a part of it. And I didn't start the day in the right format, but today's going great. Other things talked about, personal philosophy, climate, culture, I've talked productivity, I've talked delegation, you know, so it really depends, but just, you know, your leadership tools, and I can help you with that.
I remember a couple of years ago you had a webinar on productivity and you know, and a lot of the tips that you talk about in your newsletters and, you know, on the mastermind are, you know, tips to, you know, eliminate, you know, just spending too much time on emails and, you know, how to cross things off your list that aren't going to take too long and prioritize. And that's, you know, both the new principals and the experienced ones need those type of tips to, you know, maximize the time that they're in classrooms, the time that they're helping affect change and, you know, leading the instructional teams at their school. So,
You know, I say that you're never going to save the world through email, right? Uh-huh. Like nobody ever wrote an email and it's like, okay, now everything's better. And like, even today, I forget what, I was trying to log into Medium, right? There's articles and stuff that you can read. And I didn't forget my password, but when I entered my email, it said, I sent you a magic link. So I had to open up my email to get the link to read the article that I wanted to read. And anyways, there was 10 emails. I saw them, and some that I wanted to respond to like that, because it's about folks that want to get started and things that are good. I'll eventually get to them later today. Actually, after our talk, I can engage in that. But if I don't protect my morning when I'm the most productive to do some writing and to do creative projects that ultimately serve who I want to serve, then I find that I don't get the things done that I need to get done, and I've wasted my time, and then I get frustrated and all that kind of stuff. And so you got to have the discipline to, it's going to serve you better if you have the discipline to check email a few times per day. And even when that was open and I saw, ooh, I want to read that, click X, right? Like, and I was out. And so I didn't read, I didn't respond. It was hard, and I don't always win at that. But when I do, I wrote an incredible post. I create a resource that people can download. Obviously there's emails involved with that too. That will be a sequence that people get. So all of that was done this morning, but it wouldn't have gotten done, I'm telling you, Dana, if I would have checked my email.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even just having something on your email, I think I've gotten a few times in the past, like, I'm not checking my email at this, you know, between this time and this time, right? When somebody sends you an email, and I'll get back to you whatever date or time, right? Just so those people that are waiting on a response know you're taking time and you're prioritizing other tasks.
Right. So, yeah. Important stuff. Yeah. It's deep work versus shallow work. And email is always going to be shallow.
Yeah. And in your newsletters, you share a lot about how you make those goals of how many pages a day that you're going to write on your book as well, because you know, I think having those goals, having those ongoing goals, those ongoing priorities are what keep you on track. Just like when I was writing my capstone project for my doctorate, right? I had goals of when I was going to get certain things done. And when you have a large project like that or a book, you know, you want to keep on track, right?
So, totally. Absolutely.
Well, it's been a great conversation today. Out of everything we discussed on the podcast, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
Yeah, so I hope that you heard too, especially when I was in the trenches, that, give yourself some grace. I put out a video recently on LinkedIn and Facebook, and probably collectively, you know, it's thousands of views, or a little over 1,000 views at this point. And it was about being gentler, kinder, right? A little more self-care and grace. And so I really wanted you to hear that. I did take it personally, and it took me a year to get through it. And so if you think that you need to have it figured out, or, oh man, you know, I didn't handle it that well or whatever, that's okay. We all blow it. We all make mistakes. But I think if you build around yourself, you have a community, you have solid routines and rituals, then you'll make it through those hard moments and you've got what it takes. So give yourself a chance to succeed.
Great. No, those are great words to live by. Where can listeners find you online?
Everywhere. BetterLeadersBetterSchools.com. And then, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, I have a crazy handle, which is Alien Earbud. That's an anagram for Daniel Bauer. Mix up the letters and you get Alien Earbud, which is a fun visual and creative idea to me. BetterLeadersBetterSchools.com or at Alien Earbud, Twitter and Instagram.
Well, thanks so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast. Have a great rest of your day, Danny.
Yeah, thanks for your time, Dana. It's a pleasure.